Okay. We were in the middle of the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, and now we have to shift into high gear because we're running out of time. The Gemara has been talking about that there is machloket. Can there be geula without tshuva? Rabbi Lezer says, no, there has to be tshuva. Rabbi Yoshua says, yes, there can be. They're quoting psukim back and forth, and then Rabbi Yoshua brings a clincher. He quotes a Gemara in from a pasuk from Daniel, which says that this angel holds up his hands to heaven and swears in the name of God that in a period, periods and a half, the redemption will come. Now, all of you have probably heard that there are a lot of different ways that Rabbanim tried to figure out over Jewish history when the Mashiach is going to come. It all boils down to this pasuk. What does it mean, a period? And only after I understand what a period is can I understand what periods are. And then I can understand a period, periods, and a half. Bikitsur, we're not going to get into, because nobody knows exactly what that means, but the one thing which is important is that there clearly is a deadline for Galut, because that is when the redemption is going to come. Whether you understand if it's here or there or here or there, it doesn't make a difference for our purposes. And that is the background of the following Gemara. The Amar Rebbe Abba, continues the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the second paragraph. And Rebbe Abba says, by the way, the Vav at the beginning is a continuation, right? Rebbe Abba is now explaining, what is that Ketz? What is that? How do we know when the redemption is coming? There is no clearer sign than this that we're about to see. What does that mean, no clearer sign? So, parenthetically, what it means is obviously that there are unclear signs, right? All of you have learned Yechezkel, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and knows, for example, Yirmiyahu talks about there's going to be a terrible Shoah right before the redemption. Now, if you look historically, every time there was a false Messiah, the way he proved that I'm the Mashiach is because it was right after a terrible pogrom. And he said, oh, this is the Holocaust, and I must be the Mashiach. The problem is that happened many times over history, and every time that they said it couldn't get any worse, this must be the Geula, it always did get worse. So that's not a clear sign. Also, it says that there's going to be a terrible war before the coming of the Geula. And World War I, they said, this must be it. And then World War II was even greater. And then they said, this must be it. And then in the War of Independence, they looked back at Zechariah and Yechezkel, which talk about the wars before the coming of the Geula. And they saw that it's not talking about World War I or World War II, because it's talking about after Am Yisrael returns to the land of Israel, the Goyim are going to gang up and try and take it away from us. So they said, hey, so this must be the War of Independence. And then came the Six-Day War, and they said, oh, this is really miraculous, this must be it. In other words, war is not a clear sign. The Navi talks about a big earthquake that's going to precede the Geula. But again, there are a lot of earthquakes. That is not a clear sign. We're looking for a clear sign. How are we supposed to know that this is redemption? Because there are no prophets today. And the answer is, Ve'amar Rebbe Abba, continuing the Gemara in Sanhedrin, what is the clearest sign? Ein lecha ketz megule mizeh. There is no clearer sign. Kishetitein eretz Yisrael pirya ba'ayin yafa. When the land of Israel gives her fruit abundantly, az yikarev haketz, that is how you know that the redemption is coming. Ve'en l'chaketz.
My mom remembered the answer to that Gemara.
Who is that? Yael Therm. Oh. Kol
hakavod.
Oh, I have not seen you in 30 years. Okay, I won't bother the other people who are here, but good to see you. You can continue listening, obviously, and whatever you remember from 30 years ago, that's a great sign. Yael, you see what you're going to remember 30 years from now? Okay. So what is the clearest sign? Shene'emar, it says in Yechezkel, Perek Lamed Vav Pasuk Chet, Ve'atem Harei Yisrael. You mountains of Israel, Anpechem Titenu Ufer Yechem Tisu La'ami Yisrael, Ki Kirvu Lavo. Mountains of Israel, grow your branches, grow fruit, because my nation of Israel is about to return. Now the obvious question is, why is this the clearest sign? Why is everybody so excited about today, this morning, I ate an apple? What's the big deal about that apple? The answer is very, very important. We all learned in world history, at least it used to be in 10th grade, about the Fertile Crescent. Can you see this? What is the Fertile Crescent? It's shaped like a crescent, and that was the cradle of civilization where the ancient world began, where there was good land, right? Where you have land, water, travelways, and defensible borders. They learn about that in Australia. So the land of Israel is part of the Fertile Crescent. It is the southwest corner, which means that the land of Israel is fertile. We know this also from archaeologists who found a lot of date pits and olive pits. And the Tanakh tells us that the land of Israel is the land of Eretz Chitau, Sa'ora, Geffen, Teina, Rimon. It's very fruitful land. But the Torah tells us that if we don't observe the mitzvot, Hashem is going to turn off the water. The land is going to become barren. And if we still don't do tshuva, he's going to kick us out of the land. And it's going to become deserted. Here, the Ramban in Source 6 on Vayikra Kavav is very important. V'chein ma she'amar bekan, it says in the Tochecha, Parshat Bechukotai, if we don't do the Torah mitzvot, Hashem is going to exile us from the land. V'shamimu alea oyvechem. Our enemies will be astounded by how desolate the land is. Says the Ramban, he besorat tova. This is good news. Mivaseret b'chol galuyot she'en artzenu mekabelet et oyvenu. What's the good news about our land being barren? Because our enemies will not be accepted into the land. Just like a faithful wife whose husband goes away to a faraway land, she waits loyally for him to return. She doesn't give herself to anybody else. So to the land of Israel. V'gam zo ra'aya gdola v'avtacha lanu. This is a great proof and a great promise to the Jewish people. Ki lo timtza b'chol ha'yishuv eretz asher hi tova urchava, v'asher haitan noshevet me'olam, v'chareva kamoa. You will not find anywhere in the world a land which used to be good to settle, but all of a sudden it isn't good anymore. Because again, in world history, if a land has those four criterion, if it's good land, has water, travel ways, defensible borders, then people lived there 3,000 years ago and 4,000 years ago and 2,000 years ago and 1,000 years. That was always good to settle. All of a sudden, there is one place in the world that used to be part of the Fertile Crescent, but because Am Yisrael was kicked out, she is no longer fertile. Ki mi'az yatzanu mimenu lo kibla umav lashon. From the time that we left Israel, she did not accept any other nation. V'chulam ishtadlim lo shiva ve'en le'el yadam. Everybody tried. The crusaders conquered the land of Israel. They didn't succeed to make her fruitful. The Muslims and their jihads conquered the land of Israel. They did not succeed in making the land bloom. If you look at the old flower lamp map that was before Columbus, the world used to draw the map that there is Europe, Africa, Asia, and in the middle was the land of Israel. The land of Israel is very, very fruitful. And that's why everybody wanted the land of Israel. They tried to make her bloom. They did not succeed. All of a sudden, when the Jews start coming back, she is fertile. In other words, stage one, the land of Israel is naturally fertile. Stage two, if we don't do the mitzvot, it is going to be deserted and turn into desert. We actually have a picture here of Tel Aviv 110 years ago, at the beginning of the 20th century. These are the first families of Tel Aviv. Do you all see that? Can you see the map? All you see is Yamin Usmol Rakol Vachol. All you see is sand. The land was deserted, and that actually came true. Then, Yechezkel tells us in Surah 7, Yechezkel Amidvav, Ve'aretz ha'neshama te'aved, that land which was deserted will be worked, Tachar asher hayta shmama le'enei kol over, instead of it being terribly barren. And people will say, this land which was deserted will become fruitful like Gan Eden. And those destroyed cities, vaneshamot, vanerasot, bitzurot yoshavu, they will once again be resettled. There's a famous quote from Mark Twain, who visited the land of Israel in 1867. This is part of his book, The Innocents Abroad, where he describes, 1867 is just 15 years before the first Aliyah. 15 years before Baron Rothschild bought Zichron Yaakov and Rishon LeZion. And they planted and started producing the Carmel wine. Mark Twain describes the land as follows. We traverse some miles of desolate country whose soil is rich enough, but is given wholly to weeds, a silent, mournful expanse. A desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with the pomp of life and action. We reached Mount Tabor safely. We never saw a human being on the whole route. We pressed on toward the goal of our crusade, renowned Jerusalem. The further we went, the hotter the sun got, the more rocky and bare, repulsive and dreary the landscape became. There's hardly a tree or shrub anywhere. Note, again, this is 1867. Jerusalem is mournful, dreary, and lifeless. I would not desire to live here. It is a hopeless, dreary, heartbroken land. Palestine sits in sackcloth and ashes. Over it broods the spell of a curse that has withered its fields and fettered its energies. Palestine is desolate and unlovely, and why should it be otherwise? Can the curse of the deity, of God, beautify a land? Again, God cursed the land, saying that the land is going to turn from fertile to desert, until, as we saw in Surah 7, when we are about to return, she is going to once again be fruitful. And now this will blow your socks off. Have a look at this picture. This is a satellite picture of the land of Israel. You see where it's green? That is the land of Israel. You see where it's yellow? That is the border of the land of Israel. In other words, modern Israel...
Isn't it always like that?
No.
Like, isn't Mahlu, Mahlu Yudah, Mahlu Yisrael, really just north of Beer Sheva, because that's where it was fertile? Like, that's what it looks like from the map.
Malchut Yehuda, Malchut Yisrael is further north. Malchut Yehuda went down to Be'er Sheva, and you're talking about before the exile. You're right. This was the land before it was exiled. If we would have had satellite maps, actually, we don't have satellite maps, but we do have the picture that I showed you before, where the land was, in fact, also desert. This is Tel Aviv. This is Yafo. Okay. Bekitzur, that is sign number one. And maybe I'll just mention that I have a friend, David Ben Yosef, Zichrono Livracha, who used to say that in the disagreement between the Arabs and the Jews, where we say Eretz Yisrael is ours, and the Arabs say she's hers, it sounds like a classic book in literature where you have two men fighting over the same woman. It's always the same plot, where sometimes they joust it out, sometimes they have a sword fight, sometimes they duel it out, and the winner gets the girl. But in the modern world, we have a better solution. Why don't we just ask the girl who she prefers? Similarly, the Arabs were here on and off for 1,300 years, and the land of Israel did not give her fruit. Am Yisrael comes back, and once again it is fertile. Israel is among the agricultural leaders of the world. Israeli agricultural specialists go out to Arizona, Africa, all over the world to show the world how to make the desert bloom. This is sign number one, which has come true. Again, point number one, how do we know that this is the Geula, Atchalta de Geula, and it's not just another false Messiah? Because Chazal tell us the clearest sign is that when the land of Israel is going to once again be fruitful, that's a sign that Am Yisrael is about to return. Point number two is, in fact, that Am Yisrael is about to return. Now, let's look together in source 4, the Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Bet, where we mentioned this before several times in the Shura, so we don't have to go through it again. Chazal tell us that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, when they set up the Shmona Esrei, from the ninth bracha on, it was established according to the order of redemption, where the ninth bracha is Barech Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu, etc., etc. V'teintal umatar livracha al pnei adama, that Hashem should give rain, that the land of Israel should flourish. That's the first sign. What's the next bracha? Baruch Ata Hashem mevarech hashanim. Then we say Tika b'shofar gadol cherutenu v'sanes likabetz galuyotenu. That's the Gemara in Megillah. Umara ulomar kibbutz galiot lachar birkat hashanim. Why do we say the bracha for the ingathering of the exiles right after the bracha for rain in Eretz Yisrael? Quotes the pasuk that we saw beforehand in Sanhedrin Sarichet. Ve'atem arei Yisrael anpechem titenu ufer yechem tisu lami Yisrael ki kirvu lavo. Because the nation of Israel is about to return. How do you know? When the land is once again fruitful. Okay, so stage number two is Kibbutz Galiot. Now we know that there are a lot of Jews in the land of Israel. But how do we know that this is actually Kibbutz Galiot? The best way is to see a graph. If you look at the graph, for 1900 years, there were always between 2,000 and 10,000 Jews in the land of Israel. In 1882, with the first Aliyah, it jumped. What? Can you see it?
I have this in my notes from first semester.
Wow. Kol hakavod. But we're going to do things now that we didn't do in the first semester. Don't worry. Chevra, just within my lifetime, I knew my great-grandpa, Petey, who was born in 1882. At the time where the population of Israel jumped from 10,000 to 20,000. When my grandfather, Grandpa Harry, was born during World War I, it jumped to 60,000. When my father was born right before World War II, it had jumped to 474,000. When I was born, it had jumped to 1.9 million. When my son was born, it had jumped to 3.2 million. When my grandson, first grandson, was born, it was up to 5.2 million. Today, there are 6.8 million Jews in the land of Israel. Chevra, one of the things that you'll all have to learn in university is statistics. Today, everybody has to learn statistics. And one of the reasons why statistics is important, because it helps us visually see a phenomena, right? There is no way to deny that the ingathering of the exiles is taking place. Just to round it out, there was the first Aliyah, as we said, in 1882. Then the second Aliyah, the socialist Aliyah. Then the large Aliyah before the Holocaust. Then the large Aliyah after the Holocaust. In 1948, with the founding of the State of Israel and the war between the Arabs and Israel, the Jews were kicked out of Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Algeria, Tunis, and that was the next huge aliyah. The next large aliyah was the Soviet Union. That's the largest aliyah to date, 1.2 million. And since I made aliyah, I usually don't buy newspapers, but when there is a new stage in redemption, I buy a newspaper. This is a newspaper clipping, the heading from 1991, where when I was your age, there was no such thing as a black Jew in Israel. And then all of a sudden, in one day, they brought 14,000 Ethiopian Jews on Aliyah. That was Mivtza Shlomo. Afterwards was Mivtza Moshe. Altogether, 70,000 Jews from Ethiopia have made Aliyah. Almost no Jews left in Ethiopia. In 1992, there was a big war between Bosnia and Serbia. What does that have to do with us? Well, the Jews, who didn't feel close to Bosnia or Serbia, decided that they should get out. Tochnit Chirum Lechilutz Alfei Yehudim Yugoslavia. The remaining thousands of Jews from Yugoslavia were brought on Aliyah as a result of that war. Afterwards, the war spread to Bulgaria. And there weren't too many Jews in Bulgaria, but the last 68 Jews from Bulgaria were brought on Aliyah. And another exile closes shop. In the year 2001, terrible economic problems in Latin America. Adios Buenos Aires, hola Israel. The article talks about tens and tens of thousands making Aliyah from South America. From Russia, like we said, the largest Aliyah, 1.2 million Jews a year. Today, where is the largest Aliyah from? France. France, an average of 30,000 Olim a year are coming on Aliyah from France. And these are the large ones. The girls who know the Amlat program know that there's a very large Aliyah from Venezuela, particularly Uruguay, Peru, Chile. All those exiles, the young people, are coming back to the land of Israel. Nevertheless, the devil's advocate can ask, okay, so there are today 6.8 million Jews in the land of Israel, and we see it's growing, 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 and growing. But how do we know that there's not going to be another exile? That's why I brought source number 8. Midrash Tanhuma.
Wait, I have a question about the Aliyah.
Sure. That's that question came up before they brought them an Aliyah, where Rav Ovadia Yosef, who was the chief rabbi, paskin based on the Radbaz, who paskin 500 years ago, that yes, they are Jewish. I'll just mention parenthetically that halachically we have a problem because their kiddushin is kosher, halachically, but their gerushin, their divorce, is not kosher. And that means that over the centuries, there's a big problem with mamzerut. So what the Rabbanut HaRashid, Rav Ovadia Yosef, decided was to do them a favor and to say that before they get married, they have to do a giyur lechumra. So as because if they're not 100% Jewish, then we can convert them and there's no problem of mamzerut. And that's the halachic solution. So on the one hand, yes, they are Jewish, but there is a halachic solution to the problem of the non-kosher divorce. Bekitzur, let's look together in source number 8. Mira, is your mother still around?
She's teaching a class.
Ah, okay. Okay. She probably remembers this also. Midrash Tanchuma. Okay, Vashlishit Yivater Ba. There's a pasuk in Zechariah, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Chet, which literally means, in the third time, we will remain in her. Chazal explained that the third time we return to the land of Israel, It's forever. We will remain in her. There's not going to be another exile. What does that mean the third time? Chazal, writing this 1,800 years ago in Midrash Tanchuma, She'en mityashvim be'artzam ela bigeula shlishit. Notice, Chazal are wording this in the negative. There is not going to be another settling in the land of Israel, but in the final, the third redemption. Geula rishona, the first return, the first redemption, zo geulat Mitzrayim. Geula shnia, the second return, zo geulat Ezra, from Bavel, to build the second Beit HaMikdash. Vashlishit ein la hefsek. The third return is forever. It will not end. In other words, if we are here, and you were just here, I am here. If we are here, that means there is not going to be another exile. Now, just to clarify the point, in the first return, there were 600,000 Jews who came into Eretz Yisrael. In the second return, there were 42,360. You'll see their names printed in Ezra Perek Bet. Now, if 42,360 is considered a return, today, when we have 6.8 million, it's not just 42,000. It's not 10 times as much, which would be 420,000. It's not 100 times as much, which would be 4.2 million. Chevra, today we have more than 100 times as many Jews in Israel as we did during the time of the second return. Now, if that was considered a return, how can we not consider this a return? And if this is a return, there ain't going to be another exile. Now, the devil's advocate can say, well, maybe for the second return it was enough to have 42,000. But in the final return, maybe it's not considered a return until all of the Jews come back home. And for that reason, I brought source number 9. Chazal tell us in Yalkut Shimoni, Hoshea, Remez Tav Kuf Yud Chet, on the Pasuk in Hoshea, Perek Bet Pasuk Yud Zayin, Uchtiv, the Pasuk says, regarding the Geula, Ve'anta Shama Kimei Olam, Kimei Ne'ureha, Uchiyom Tse Alota Mi'aretz Mitzrayim. Hashem will answer us in the end of days, in the final redemption, like he did in the time of our youth, like when he took us out of Egypt. Ma yitziatam mimitzrayim b'shishim ribo, uknisatam la'aretz b'shishim ribo, ken limot ha-mashiach b'shishim ribo. Chazal, in fact, are telling us that the final return to Eretz Yisrael, the third and final return, is not just going to be 42,000. It has to be 600,000, just like in the first return from Egypt. Today you can check up on the internet and you can take an educated guess how many Jews were in Israel in 1948 in Shnat Tashach at the founding of the Declaration of the State of Israel? 650,000. 650,000. In other words, there are more than 600,000, which means there's not going to be another exile. Now, the devil's advocate will ask, but if it has to be like in Yitziat Mitzrayim, hare, in the first return from Egypt, it was not 600,000 people, it was 600,000 army-aged men. So I checked, and in the Six-Day War in 1967, there were 670,000 army-aged men participating in the Six-Day War. In other words, no matter how you look at this number 600,000, we have passed it. And just combine tradition 8 in source 8 and the tradition in source number 9. As soon as we return, there's not going to be another exile. How much is the return? 600,000. Today, we have 6.8 million, which means, yes, we have returned. Chevra, in none of the false messiahs was there the flourishing of the land of Israel, or was there kibbutz galiot from all the four corners of the world? That's point number 2. Point number 3, how do we know that this is not just another false messiah? The state of Israel. Let's look together in source 10, the Ramban at the end of Shira Shirim. The Ramban writes, apparently, there is this tradition, ancient tradition, Birishion, he's writing this 800 years ago, Birishion Malchei Ha'umot Ube'ezratam, with the permission of the nations of the world and with their help, Yelchu La'eretz Yisrael, the Jews will go to the land of Israel. Kidichti ve'viu et kol achechem ve'gomer, ve'amalchut ha'hi nimshach ve'no posek le'olam. That government that we will set up with the help of the nations of the world is going to be forever. And that apparently...
Did you just see that notification?
Yeah, that means that it's not going to turn off after 40 minutes. That's good. Thanks for the heads up. Okay, but we're going to probably not run more than 10 minutes anyway, because you're probably tired. So, the Balfour Declaration actually came with the permission of the nations of the world. If you think about it, in the 13th century, when the Ramban is writing this, who were these nations of the world? They were not Jew lovers. Most of them were anti-Semitic. The Ramban himself was expelled from Spain later on. And this sounds like a supernatural miracle. The nations of the world are going to become lovers of Zion. Nevertheless, we saw this come true. Source 11, the Radak, tells us another aspect of the state of Israel that is going to be part of the redemption. The Radak, again, one of the Rishonim, lived about 650 years ago. On the Pasuk, Al Tivtechu Ben Divim, on Tilim Kuf Memvav Pasuk Gimel, Al Derech Sheamar Yirmiyahu, Umin Hashem Yasur Libo, Eleim Yiftach Be'Adam Yasim Aikar Be'El Yidbarach. A person cannot forget God. There's no problem having human help. But remember that when humans help you out, that is because Hashem decided that it should be so. Jump down towards the end. Kamosha Sivev Chuat Galut Bavel Al Yedei Koresh. Just like Cyrus, when the Ezra and Nehemiah came back to the land of Israel, it was with the permission of Koresh. Vechein La'atid, and here's the punchline, so it will be in the future. Yesovev Geulat Yisrael Al Yedei Malchei Hagoyim. Hashem will arrange the redemption of Israel through the nations of the world, the governments, the kings. Sheya'ir et rucham l'shalcham, kamo shekatu ve'viu et kol achechem mikol ha'goyim mincha la'ashem. Chevra, the state of Israel is the third clear sign that we know that we are in Yemot HaMashiach. Chevra, let's look quickly, because again, I want to start closing up. Source 14. The Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, Perek Chet Halacha Zayin. Shekol HaTovot HaMitnabim Bahem HaNaviim LiYisrael, all of the prophecies that the prophets told us about the end of days, Einam Ela L'Dvarim Shebaguf, they're all physical. Shenehenim Bahem Yisrael LiYimot HaMashiach, that Israel will benefit and enjoy during Yimot HaMashiach, Bizman Shetashuv HaMemshala Li Yisrael. What does that mean? At the time that sovereignty will return to Israel, that is Yemot HaMashiach. In other words, according to the Rambam, 800 years ago, when we have a Jewish state, that is going to be Yemot HaMashiach. If that's not clear enough, I always like to bring source 15, which is halachic. Very often, Haredim say, well, the Rambam is the Rambam, the Radak, the Ramban, that's Hashkafa. Give me a halachic source. Here is the halachic source. Source 15. In the Shulchan Aruch, Orachayim, Tafkuf Samech Aleph, Si'if Aleph, it says, Haro'e Are Yehuda Bechur Banan, Omer Are Kodshecha Hayum Midbar, Vikorea. When a person during the time of exile would come to the cities of Judea, in their destruction, he would have to tear his clothing as a sign of mourning and recite the pasuk, "Your holy cities have become deserted," and tear his clothing as a sign of mourning. Now, Chevron, when you came to Talpiot, you did not do Kriya. When you go to Be'er Sheva or Ashkelon, you don't do Kriya. When you go to Gush Etzion... Sorry?
They actually told us to do Kriya when we got to Talpiot. If you go to the
Tayyela,
because you can see...
Oh, that's Reb Moshe Feinstein's opinion regarding Har HaBayit. Reb Moshe Feinstein agrees that on Talpiot, when you look at the building of your Midrasha, you don't have to do Kriya. But if you see Har HaBayit, Reb Moshe disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah, you know what? Let's see the Mishnah Berurah, and then we'll discuss Reb Moshe. Okay? The Mishnah Berurah is source 16 in Sif Katan Bet, where he has to define the term in its destruction. What does it mean when the cities of Judea are destroyed? What does it mean destroyed? Does it mean 5 buildings, 10 buildings, 10 people, 20 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 600,000? How do you know if it's destroyed or not? How do you know whether to do Kriya or not? Explains the Mishnah Berurah, and again, this is halach lemaaseh, nobody disagrees with this. Afilu yoshvin behen Yisrael. Even if there are Jews living in the land of Israel, like in the Chavetz Chaim's, the Mishnah Berurah's time, kevan sheYishmaelim moshlim aleihem mikri bechur banan. As long as the Arabs are ruling over it, it is considered destroyed. In other words, in one word, what is the halachic definition of destruction, of Hurban? Moshel. Who rules? If Babylonians or Romans or Arabs rule over the land of Israel, then you have to do Kriya. If there is a Jewish state, everybody agrees that you don't have to do Kriya, including Reb Moshe Feinstein. What does Reb Moshe add? He disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't differentiate. If you see Har HaBayit, you don't have to do Kriya if there is a Jewish state. Reb Moshe Feinstein says, Har HaBayit, it's not enough to have a Jewish army, Jewish state, Jewish control. As long as there's no Beit HaMikdash, it is considered destruction, and that's why there are people who hold, like Reb Moshe, especially Americans, who do Kriya when you see Har HaBayit. Not when you go to Hebron, not when you go to Alon Shvut, not when you go to Be'er Sheva, not when you go to Talpiot, or any of the other neighborhoods of Yerushalayim. Just when you see Har HaBayit, according to his opinion. Even the Haredim today, even the anti-Zionists today, when they come to Israel, they do not do Kriya. Ask them why not. The answer is the Mishnah Berurah. Because we have a Jewish state, we are no longer in Churban, but rather we are in Geula. Now, yeah. Can you please raise your voice? I don't hear you well. Great question. There really was a machloket. After the Six-Day War, after Israel liberated Har HaBayit, so Rav Gorin said, we have to change the Anenu, because it's just not true anymore. Rav Chaim David Alevi and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, they don't change the whole paragraph. They say it's just enough to change one word. You add the word Ha'ir Shehaita, the city which was desolate, which was destroyed, which was empty. Rav Avadya Yosef is a third opinion. He says that even though the land is in Jewish hands, as long as it's not religious, you could still say that we mourn Yerushalayim. But none of those poskim, not Rav Chaim David Alevi, not Rav Lichtenstein, not Rav Avadya, not Rav Gorin, nobody does Kriya when they go to anywhere, except, like we said, Rav Moshe Feinstein, when it comes to Har HaBayit. But again, that's just regarding Har HaBayit. Regarding the rest of Arei Yehuda, everybody agrees that you don't have to do Kriya anymore, because we are no longer in Churban. And like the Rambam says, as soon as there is a sovereign Jewish state, we are in Yemot HaMashiach. I should point out, because not everybody was at the beginning of the year, Yemot HaMashiach literally means the days of Mashiach. It's a time period. It's not one day where Mr. Mashiach comes, because as we saw in source number 4 in Masechet Megillah, Mr. Mashiach comes at the end of the period. First, the land of Israel flourishes, then Kibbutz Galiot, then a Sanhedrin, then Beit HaMikdash, and then Mashiach. Anyway, source 17, I hope sounds familiar to some of you, to two of you at least, that you were at the beginning of the year we learned this, but it's always good to review. The Maharal, in Gvurot Hashem, Perek Yudchet. The Maharal writes, Ule Atid, in the future, Malchut HaMashiach Shetit Chadesh, the kingdom of the Mashiach, which will be renewed, Hi Yotza'a Mina Malchut Arishona Shelifneze. It will grow out of the previous kingdom which preceded it. Vezeki Malchut Yisrael HaKdosha, the holy kingdom of Israel, Sheyesh LaMadrega Elohit Pnimit, the kingdom of Mashiach, which is godly, holy, spiritual, Hitzomachat mitoch malchut bilti kedosha. It will grow out of a non-holy government. Here we have the Maharal telling us that the kingdom of Mashiach will be holy, will be godly, but it will grow out of a previous kingdom which will not be holy, i.e., the non-religious government. And the question is, how did the Maharal know 400 years ago that there was going to be a secular state of Israel? He wasn't a prophet, but apparently he has a source in the Vim. And with this we finish source 19. Source 18. The Navi Micha in Treyasar, Perek Dalet Pasuk Chet, summarizes the Geula process in three steps. First I'll translate it, and then we'll explain. Translate it literally. Ve'ata migdal eder. And you, the barn, who hold the flock. Ophel, the fortress. The Malbim's going to ask, is it a barn or is it a fortress? Bat Zion adecha te'ateh. Daughter of Zion will be brought to you. Uva ha-memshala ha-rishona. The first government will come. Mamlechet lebat Yerushalayim, a kingdom to the daughter of Yerushalayim. We'll see if anybody caught the duke of the Malbim. The Malbim says that if there's going to be a Memshala Rishona, a first government, that infers that there's going to be what? A second government. Okay. There's going to be a first government, and there's a second government. But did anybody notice the difference between the first Memshala Rishona and the second Mamlacha Lebat Yerushalayim? What's the difference between Memshala and Mamlacha? Memshala, how would you translate it? Government. How would you translate Mamlacha?
Kingdom.
Kingdom. That's exactly what the Malbim is Medayik. The first government.
What do you hold about the people who say that there won't be a monarchy?
Oh, we're going to learn. We're going to have a whole shiur about that in the second semester. After Pesach, we're going to have a shiur exactly what is going to happen. Because the Netziv writes explicitly that if Am Yisrael does not want a monarchy, there ain't going to be a monarchy. What is there going to be? That we'll learn about more seriously, not in a one-sentence answer, okay? But let's see the Malbim inside, where he makes that diuk. Ve'ata migdal eder. Mesev panav el har tzion aniskar. The Navi Micha turns his face to har tzion, and he says, Omer ilav, ata har tzion, she'ata migdal shele eder halaz. You are the barn that is holding this flock. The flock is Am Yisrael. The flock of Israel is limping, is rejected after long and difficult exile. Hashem will bring us back to the barn. Now, What is the connotation of a barn? It's not very impressive. It's smelly. It's small. It's dark. The only thing that a barn really does is that it protects the flock. And that, says the Malbim, is going to be the first government. Let's see it inside. The first government is going to be like a barn, which protects the flock. But that barn eventually will turn into a strong fortress. There will be a transition from the barn to the fortress in three stages. Tchila, what are the three stages of redemption? Tchila batzion adecha teater, shegaluyot yatchilu litkabetz. Micha tells us the geula will begin, that the daughter of Zion will begin to return. Notice, kibbutz galuyot, it's not going to happen in one day. It's going to happen slowly but surely. Galut Yehuda u'Binyamin shem batzion shegalu mitzion b'churban bayit sheni yitkabetzu eleich. That's stage number one, mass aliyah. Afterwards will come the first government. Watch this. Tavo memshala ktana. That first government, the first state of Israel, is going to be a small government. Shielem ktsat memshala vahanaga. It's not going to be a fortress. It's not going to be a superpower. It's going to be a small government. Like it was in the olden days, before there was a king of Israel, where we had leaders who led us, or what the Greeks called a republic, or what we call a democracy. And that's what the Netziv, that we'll learn later on in the year, the Netziv talks about how if Am Yisrael at the beginning does not want a monarchy, there is going to be a democracy, because that's what people will want. That's the first memshala. Summarize, what is the first government going to be like? We saw in the Maharal, non-religious. We saw in the Malbim, it's going to be like a barn, small, democratic, not very impressive. I don't want to say smelly, but not the ideal state. Ve'acharkach, out of that first government, tavo mamlechet lebat Yerushalayim. Yele malchut kavua shu malchut beit David, she'acharkach yimloch ha'melech ha'mashiach ba'mamlecha kavua. Out of the first government will grow the final kingdom, the government. Bikitzur, to summarize, notice we did not mention the Holocaust as a sign of Geula, even though it is one of the signs of redemption. Why? Like we said before, it's not a clear sign. Whenever there was a false Mashiach, the only proof that he ever had was there's terrible anti-Semitism, terrible pogrom, this must be it, I must be the Mashiach. But that was not it. I personally can't imagine a worse Holocaust than that which we saw. Especially that we have a state of Israel. So if chas v'shalom things get bad, everyone can come here. But I'm not going to mention that as a proof, because that's not a clear proof. A Holocaust, nobody knows what's going to happen in another 100, 200 years. But there are three clear proofs. Proof number one, that there's not going to be another exile, that this is the clearest proof, Chazal say, when the land of Israel flourishes after being deserted, a desert for 2,000 years, check. That has taken place. Israel is one of the leading agriculturalists in the world. Proof number two. Chazal tell us that after we return 600,000 Jews to the land of Israel, there is not going to be another exile. Check. There are 6.8 million Jews in the land of Israel, coming from all the different continents. Today, arguably, most of the Jews in the world are probably in the land of Israel. That's point number two. And as we saw in the Midrash Tanhuma, as soon as we come back, we're not going to come back until the third return, which means that if we come back, this is the third return, and there's not going to be a fourth exile. And point number three, after the flourishing of the land of Israel, and Kibbutz Galuyot is the state of Israel. I'll just finish off with an anecdote. I might have told you once that I was speaking in New York once. And usually I ask the rabbi, the local rabbi, a little about the community before I speak. Dalifnei mi ata omed. And I didn't get a chance. And I started the talk with asking the community, about 250, 300 people. I asked them, by a show of hands, how many of you people are planning on making Aliyah? Two or three people raised their hands. And I obviously did not hide my disappointment. And the rabbi saved the day. He says, Rabbi Shvat, don't worry. In Yemot HaMashiach, we're all going to make Aliyah. So I asked the people, is that true? I said, by a show of hands, how many of you are planning on making Aliyah during Yemot HaMashiach? All of them raised their hand. And then I said, what if I can prove to you that we are in Yemot HaMashiach? And that's when I learned the shiur with them. And yes, we are in Yemot HaMashiach. B'shuv Hashem Shivat Zion, Ayinu Kicholmim. It says in Tehillim that when we will return to the land of Israel, we will be like dreamers. And it's hard to believe because dreams usually don't come true. But knowing all of you personally, I have no doubt that you will decide to be part of the dream, to live the dream, and to be part of this historical time period that we're living in. And like I told you in the past, every Jew that's going to be around in Yemot HaMashiach is going to have one great-great-great-grandmother who had the guts to make Aliyah. And it could be you. And by doing so, you will be making a historical decision, saving your family tree forever and ever, and Bezrat Hashem, hopefully bringing your parents as well. So it was a pleasure.